Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. I am joined today here at our 1285 podcast studio by senior U.S. economist from the UBS Chief Investment Office, Andrew Dubinsky. Andrew, thank you for dropping by. I know it's been a very busy couple of days as it relates to the Fed. We had the FOMC meeting, a lot of data to talk about as well. So thank you for dropping by for what will be a very timely conversation with our listeners and our clients on today's episode. Welcome back, Andrew.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, it's been quite a week for data and policy.
So let's begin with the FOMC meeting. And this was interesting because Chairman Powell is coming up to the end of his term, coming up on May 15th. We did hear from the chairman yesterday during a press conference. So let's maybe begin there. Can you provide us with some key takeaways, reflections on the April FOMC statement, as well as the press conference, which followed, delivered by current Chairman Jerome Powell?
Right. This was a closely followed event. Obviously, it's a Fed meeting, but Chair Powell's likely last press conference. And so obviously, there is going to be a lot of focus on the statement. Would they keep the existing easing bias in the statement? Obviously, there was expectation they would hold rates steady, and they did that. And the key thing is they did maintain this wait-and-see stance with an easing bias still in place. There's this sentence that signals this easing bias, and that stayed untouched. But there were three dissents favoring to end that easing bias. And there were just other pieces in the, obviously, in the press conference suggested that the hurdle for rate cuts had risen. And, you know, the key takeaway from those dissents and just the press conference statements is just the risk to a much longer pause has increased. And, you know, these four dissents are quite interesting. One in favor of cuts is just the highest number that we've seen since 1992. Now, were these dissents totally unexpected? In some respect, we had some signs of this type of division in the minutes from January and March, where there were a growing number of participants asking for more two-sided guidance. But it was somewhat surprising it showed up in this dissent. And this division is likely going to carry over into Chair Warsh's leadership if we assume it gets confirmed by June. And I just note that, you know, other parts of the statement weren't as surprising, but they did acknowledge the increase in core and headline inflation, but just noting that inflation was elevated versus just being somewhat elevated, and they continued to note the uncertainty from geopolitical risks. But there were a lot of fireworks, I would say, as much as we get fireworks in a press conference from Chair Powell, that, you know, that he would remain on the board as a governor, and signaling that he'd keep a low profile. But, you know, it definitely breaks a bit from tradition, where chairs tend to move away from the board. But it was clear that he wasn't totally satisfied with the state of the investigation in the Fed. And he, wants to, you know, stick around to help protect the institution. But our expectation is that he will show a lot of deference to the incoming chair. And which is the norm for governors historically, as you could see in these dissents. Obviously, you had one governor dissenting in favor of easing, but historically, you really see the governor stay pretty close to the chair. And I think that's what our expectation would be going forward from the governors, particularly from Powell. And I think the other thing we heard from Powell that likely will carry over will just be the conditions for what they want to see before they start looking at cuts is just a moderation in core goods inflation. And we did see some more signs of that this morning in the monthly PCE data, where core goods inflation decelerated to 0.2%. Just more signs that oil prices have peaked. And so that condition obviously will take some more time, and really depends on what's happening in the Strait of Hormuz. But it's definitely a higher bar for cuts than what we heard in the past. And so that's, yeah, it was definitely an eventful meeting with a lot of content in the press conference.
Andrew, as we begin to close the chapter on Jerome Powell as current Fed chairman, we look ahead to Kevin Warsh as the likely incoming chairman of the Federal Reserve. You recently wrote about his testimony before the Senate, and we are expecting to have him confirmed by June for the appointment. What can we expect to see from a Kevin Warsh-led Fed? What will be the focuses in his mind that perhaps will inform monetary policy, and what are CIO's expectations for Fed monetary policy through the balance of 2026?
Yeah, so, you know, from his testimony, we heard a couple of things, and they were generally in line with his comments in the past year leading up to his selection, his nomination, and now moving into this confirmation process. But there are definitely some details he provided that definitely suggests he has a bit of a different framework than the current Fed about how they want to look at inflation and just how forward-looking they'll be. So just to get into more of the details, like he has said he wants a regime shift to a more forward-looking rate policy, but with less forward guidance and also less reliance on the balance sheet. So for example, we have this forward guidance in the statement right now that shows an easing bias. It'll be interesting to see how maybe he wants to take a look at that. And I would also note right now, I'd say policy could be described as quite a bit more backward looking than Warsh's preferences. Right now we're looking for improvements in realized inflation measures. The committee is really not comfortable looking through oil price driven inflation and tariff driven inflation completely. There's a lot of confidence that that'll be a one-off, but not enough confidence that they're willing to really think about returning to a more neutral rate today. And one thing he got into the details of is that he doesn't really think core PCE is the best way to view trend inflation. So core PCE today trended up to 3.2% year over year, so it's quite a bit above the target. But he emphasized other measures of inflation that tend to remove the outlier. So he referenced median and trim mean inflation, which just are different ways to slice the data. And right now, those measures look a lot closer to that 2% target. And he also really got into the details that suggests that he would be a lot more comfortable looking through geopolitical or tariff-driven inflation. And so that's certainly a break from the current FOMC. And one reason why we expect some of this division that we were seeing in the April meeting to carry on, or maybe it could get worse, we'll have to just watch and see. And I think another dimension of where he definitely is has a strong view that we haven't really seen as much in the existing committee is just seeing AI as a very disinflationary supply side force. That is, he has quite a bit of confidence that the productivity that we could get from AI will help tilt inflation lower. And that is something we've heard before, but certainly it'll be interesting to see how it influences the committee. And the last thing I would mention, and this is not new, is that he definitely prefers a smaller balance sheet, but he acknowledged it's going to take some time to really accomplish that policy goal. And we've heard a lot about a preference for a smaller balance sheet from him for some time. So that was not so surprising, but just something else where it's a bit different than the current Fed. So our bottom line is, if anything, we'd expect the hurdle for easing with the new chair possibly to be a bit lower if he's able to convince his peers to consider those other inflation measures. And our expectation is that core goods inflation, the tariff effects, will really decelerate quite a bit as we get into the second and third quarter. And our view on oil prices is that they should also be lower by year end. So we're going to get a couple of things coming together along with decelerating growth that we think will help tilt the committee back to easing by later this year. So we're still expecting them to resume cuts, but with the risk that this easing cycle straddles, would start later and possibly extend to 2027.
Now, in the midst of this upcoming transition period at the Fed, and of course, in parallel to the FOMC meeting this week, the data, Andrew, of course, does not stop flowing. We've received some notable data points this week as we're recording here on Thursday, April 30th. We do have the April jobs report coming up very soon as well to be mindful of. What have you been picking up on as of late, and what has the data been telling you about the health of the U.S. economy?
Yeah, so, you know, we're recording this on Thursday, and we just got the first quarter GDP data, and so growth came in right around 2%. But I would say the details probably are a bit stronger than that headline number, where we saw that the private domestic final sales, which is focusing on consumption and investment, fixed investment, which tends to be the most persistent part of GDP, that picked back up to about 2.5%. And there's a lot of volatility in trade that helped tilt the headline GDP down, as well as a one-off boost from the unwind of the government shutdown, you know, pushing GDP back up. So there's always usually a number of good reasons to look a bit more at the final sales data than the overall number. And I think what we saw in the March data, in the Q1 data in particular, is that business investment is growing quite strong. It's likely benefiting from last year's tax cuts and just in the AI theme and equipment spending continuing. And that was very clear in this data. And I think it's pretty clear that the tax cuts are probably helping consumer spending, but they're facing now some headwinds from oil, and those headwinds will likely, you know, pick up in the second and third quarters. The, you know, inflation data worsened, right? Headline inflation moved up to 3.5%, and we're expecting March won't be the peak, and that the peak will probably be closer to May, where it's moved closer to 4% in headline inflation. And that's certainly gonna weigh on incomes, and one reason we're expecting the second half of growth to definitely to probably to decelerate a bit. And we're getting some signs, I think, in the higher frequency credit card spending data that April is going to be a little bit softer than March. And we have this environment where there's a tug of war between the tax cuts, which I think have come in close to expectations, or suggesting about 100 to 120 billion of extra money from retroactive tax cuts, and an extra maybe 40 billion or so from the withholding. So in total, let's say 160 billion from last year's tax cuts, but largely getting offset by the higher energy costs. And so we think those energy costs definitely weigh on real spending more as we get to the second half, or even in the second quarter. And in terms of the job data, I think the thing that we've been seeing is just a lot of volatility in the month-to-month data, but not a lot of signs that this no hire, no fire backdrop has changed that much. So the unemployment rate has been trending lower, and I would expect, as long as we're in the stronger growth environment, it was going to continue to be stable to lower. But as we move to the second half, labor demand could soften, but I don't think we're expecting any real pivots in the very near term based on the high frequency data we've seen from the jobs front.
Well, Andrew, really appreciate you dropping by the studio this morning to keep our listeners, our clients, informed on CIO's thinking when it comes to the Fed, expectations for monetary policy in the months ahead, but also keeping us informed on the state of the health of the U.S. economy and how that's perhaps informing the Fed's decision-making when it comes to monetary policy. Andrew, thank you again for dropping by this morning.
Oh, no, thank you.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.